Hello everyone, you're listening to RotoViz Radio. My name's Colm Kelly. I am filling in as host on today's show for Mr. Pat Crane, who is on his vacation, a well-deserved rest from hosting duties for him, and I'll be here today. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland, and I'm delighted to be joined by the regular co-host here on the show, RotoViz co-owner, Mr. Sean Siegel, who you can find on Twitter at FF_contrarian. How are you doing, Sean?
Great, looking forward to a big week here, getting ready for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's going to certainly be busy, both from just the website's point of view and RotoViz Radio. I know we have a real full slate of podcasts coming up this week. It was a little bit quieter maybe for the last 2 weeks, but it is really going to be action-packed this week up there on RV Radio, and I have no doubt that the site is going to be the same. And the site has been pretty busy anyway, just with all the draft coverage going on. It's just a great time of year. It's always great when you're involved in the fantasy football community. So I have to say as well, just before we start really getting into the topics, it's an honor and a privilege for myself here to be a part of the RotoViz Radio flagship show. I know I'm part of the network, you know, doing the other podcast, working behind the scenes, but Sean asked me to come on here and to give some of my opinions on the show, so I am very, very humbled at that. So thanks, Sean, for that one.
Yeah, well, we're excited to have you on. You've been doing fantastic work on the other shows, and you know, you're almost certainly going to be an upgrade on Pat and me.
Oh, don't be too down on yourself. And Pat is absolutely awesome at all the work he does. So hopefully he's enjoying the vacation time if he does get a chance to listen into us here. So we'll kick off the show. We have lots of topics to cover, but I think we need to start with the big game that everyone's talking about this week. What's your biggest takeaway, Sean, from the Pro Bowl?
Oh, the Pro Bowl, always the uniforms. I think that it's a big win for uniform makers, and much like the Thursday night games, what I get out of it is the brightness off the screen. I think that if the teams gave us more to root for specifically, maybe some of the teams like the Ravens, for example, I think they would have managed to sustain their success after their Super Bowl victory better if they took a little bit of a pointer from the Pro Bowl there.
Yeah, nice bright uniforms, and of course the big game everyone's really talking about this week is the Super Bowl, but we'll be touching on that later on the show. First, we're going to look at a couple of items and articles that have been up on rotoviz.com over the last couple of weeks, and one that was up that really caught my eye was the Dynasty mock draft that was up, the startup mock with the first round going up there. Sean, I'll let you go first and have the floor on it based on maybe some of the best values or some of the most controversial picks. Is there any of them that really stood out for you just when you got the first glimpse of it that you thought maybe that guy's too high or that guy's too low?
Yeah, we asked the guys to nominate who they felt their own most controversial picks were, or the picks that they were getting some feedback on Twitter that stood out. And from those, there were three that really jumped out to me that I think are interesting, not necessarily controversial from a perspective of being way too high or way too low, but picks that definitely generate some conversation. And the first was Juju Smith-Schuster at 305. You've got a player here who, coming into the season, I think people were much lower on him. He tended to fall outside the first round in rookie drafts this last summer. So when you have a player who is not even getting picked in the first round, and we have all kinds of data showing that, you know, after first round picks in rookie drafts, that the value there just falls off a cliff. It doesn't mean you can't hit on someone. This was obviously a very good year for several people who came from outside the first round. But you have that drop off. So someone who was viewed in a certain way a year ago, it can be difficult for people to turn around their analysis on that player. But Smith-Schuster is an interesting guy in that the two big red flags, I think, for him were this final season in college where he struggled, he had some injuries, and then really lost some of the market share back to his teammates, along with just having a lot less raw production. And then he goes to the off-season workouts and just does not test like an elite athlete. And so anytime you're using one of those first-round dynasty picks, first-round rookie picks, and then an early pick in a startup, you're usually looking for a guy who can really dominate. Someone like a Calvin Johnson, a Julio Jones, you know you're not going to get that kind of player very often, but you compare them to Smith-Schuster as an athlete and you've got this gigantic gap. On the other hand, we look at Smith-Schuster as a producer and he's been very impressive. He had the early breakout as a college player and he was young for each year he was in college. And then he has this breakout as a rookie. And we're going to talk about it several different times in the show, but every year I do an article looking at the wide receiver breakouts, just a sort of straightforward piece, trying to help calibrate our expectations for when people have broken out and what they've done subsequently. And it probably comes as no surprise that wide receivers who break out as rookies go on to much better careers than people from those other groups. So they have a big advantage on year three breakouts or year four breakouts, not only in terms of the long term, but even, you know, just next season. So I think Smith-Schuster's outlook is better than people think. And at 305, he was the 17th wide receiver off the board. I think you can make an argument for him even much earlier. Where would you be looking to take Smith-Schuster?
I think that I was lucky enough in a lot of drafts last year that I was pretty high on him, got some very good values on him in those rookie drafts, as you mentioned, where he was falling. I think if you look at just the production he's had, you know, a lot of people were high on Martavis Bryant over his production for the last two or three years, but what he has done obviously off the field has been a major concern for him, and then Juju Smith-Schuster came in and he fitted in there along with Antonio Brown, and he pretty much, like, the way Big Ben went to him on just such important occasions this year shows the faith that they have in him as a receiver and his hands and his ability. And I just think that what the team is showing obviously helps support what he's going to likely do moving forward in fantasy football. I think the talent is certainly there, as you mentioned, with the breakout age at such a young age at college. He's still so young. I think still under 21, is that correct?
I think just turned 21. Yeah.
I think his production this year is the most success of a player under 21, though I think I heard that somewhere over the last couple of weeks prior to his 21st birthday. So, you know, you've had players that have come in like Randall Cobb, very young breakout age, but it's kind of faded off. But I think when you look at him versus you look at Juju Smith-Schuster, I think there's a difference in the play. There's a lot more physicality with Schuster, and he's been used in the red zone very, very consistently. I do think 305 is an interesting spot for him. I think it's pretty fair based on, you know, what he did throughout the season. You kind of get that first round true, and there's a lot of, you know, the expected names there, but once you start to go down into that third round, into that late second round, there's a lot of players that are up for opinion between the third round and the fifth round. Do you feel that that's kind of a true balance, that between that kind of late second, kind of maybe early sixth, there's a lot of players there that could be switched up just based on your opinion of a certain player that could, you know, you could end up taking them in certain drafts in the fifth round and they're going in third round in certain other drafts?
There's definitely a big drop after sort of the middle of the second round, late second round. I really like the talent you can get in those first four rounds. And so your first four round picks need to be locks for you. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they would be the same for someone else, but your first four guys, they have to be players who can be foundation players for your team. And, you know, you want to be looking at those guys as having a lot of different boxes that they check that you're going to feel confident that they can anchor that squad for a long, long time. And that kind of brings us into our second controversial player, a different type of player than Smith-Schuster, drafted seven picks later in our draft, Robert Woods. And he was a fifth-year breakout and a very young fifth-year breakout coming out of college also very early. But in looking back at the last 16 years, we had 13 guys who broke out in their fifth season. And just for the definition, they're using 200 PPR points as that threshold, which roughly corresponds to a wide receiver two season. So you get these guys that are fitting in there, very clear in the lineup types of players. Nine of those 13 players were coming off of a team switch. So they'd had their first four seasons, they came up for free agency, they moved to a new team, and then, you know, really took off with that new team. And so then Robert Woods would be the example of that guy this year, where he moves from the Bills to the Rams. And somewhat surprisingly, since the Rams have some competition for targets there, had an excellent season. So then, you know, you look at these players and what they do subsequently, and you've got some big names like Emmanuel Sanders, Joe Horn, Derek Mason, Julian Edelman, Doug Baldwin. They go on to have very good careers. The rest of the guys basically immediately fall back off the map. So when you're looking at Robert Woods, you kind of have to make that determination. Is he going to be a guy who very suddenly now is among the elite that you would feel very comfortable with at 312? Or do you still have this huge risk that he will disappear again next season?
No, I'm pretty confident in Robert Woods. You know, early on in the season this year, I was kind of keeping an eye on him in the offseason, but as the season really started, the first couple of weeks, I really dived in big on him. I picked him up in a couple of leagues, you know, pretty cheap early on compared to what you would get him for now. He is only 25 years old, so you mentioned him having 5 years in the league now, and, you know, so he's, you know, his birthday is going to be October, so he's still going to be 25 as we enter this season. I think over his career, the high draft capital, high enough in my opinion, 44 overall pick in 2013. But when you look back to his years, even in Buffalo, he pretty much didn't play full seasons any year. And the same thing happened this year again, 12 games this year. But prior to that, he had one 16-game season. The rest were 13, 14, and 14. But look at his production throughout it. At least 40 catches in all those seasons, at least 500 yards in all those seasons. So pretty much then the lowest yards per game he had in that time was in 2015. 39.4, and his average per reception has been pretty steadily. It's been over 10 and 10.8 in every season, but he's had, you know, 13.9 this year. But his rookie season, he did have 14.7. The big difference this year compared to those other years was the touchdown production. He had two 100 yard games this year, but he did have five touchdowns, which matched his career high. So I think overall, like, we kind of seen it trending in this direction. But if he played in a full 16 game sample size this year, playing in those 12, you know, you're likely looking that he's going to hit 70 receptions or more, and then he's closing in then on 1,000 yards. And if he can bump that or even keep that five touchdowns for the season, I think there's a huge significant value there. But what I think is interesting with guys like Robert Woods, when they have this production after it not being a massive production in their career prior to it, just being kind of, you know, a wide receiver 3-4 kind of player, and then this year he has a much, much more productive year. The interesting thing always moving forward is, can he sustain that? Sometimes when your expectations are lower and a player comes in and does achieve some form of an increase in production, your opinion can change very quickly. Whereas if you had a player, you know, on the opposite side of the spectrum, like Sammy Watkins, who we expect so much of, but it just hasn't worked out for him so far with injuries, and then with the move this year, it looks like he will be staying with the Buffalo for the next season. But it's, you know, that kind of way of adjusting your perception based on where you had these players valued over the last couple of seasons. So I do feel that it is a fair value for him there. But the interesting thing will be, in dynasty terms, what they do. Obviously, Cooper Kupp's going to be there, young rookie. And then, you know, Sammy Watkins, as I mentioned, does he get an extension with the Rams and moving forward? The exciting thing is, obviously, the offense. Sean McVay, I think we wouldn't be as excited if we said Jeff Fisher here. So there is the opportunity long-term to buy into this LA Rams offense. And I think there's going to be nice production with them moving forward. Do you feel like it is an offense to be buying into, and particularly in dynasty?
It's definitely an offense to buy into. It does, you know, you list off those players, and then you think in terms of the passing offense, Todd Gurley is going to get a decent number of targets. You also have some young tight ends who didn't make a big impact this year, but a player like Gerald Everett might be coming on the next season or the season after that to play a fairly large role. So you do start to run into some volume issues, and then it's a question of which player is going to suffer from that. And this past year, obviously, it was Watkins who suffered. And to think of both of those guys being in Buffalo, both now being with the Rams, and Watkins actually going at 408 in this draft, so going after Woods, it would be hard to have ever foreseen a scenario, a year ago, 2 years ago, where you'd be in a draft where Woods would go before Watkins. But certainly, based on their performance this season and the way they're used in this offense, it looks justified.
Yeah, it is justified. I think still, I would still go back to the argument that if it's a player for player based on ability and talent, I would still think Sammy Watkins is the better player. But you have to go at some point in their career, you have to just go in usage. And that's what I mentioned with Schuster. He's getting that usage. The team trusts him. Obviously, there's some reason why the team was going with Robert Woods over Sammy Watkins. So we'll see what happens moving forward. The other player that was quite interesting is a player who, you know, is particularly in Dynasty, a lot of people who own him in their Dynasty leagues have probably held on to him for the last 2 or 3 years. And that is Josh Gordon, who went at 402, so just right after that start of the fourth round, right after players like Alshon Jeffrey, but before players like Demaryius Thomas, Will Fuller, and Devin Funchess. Out of those kind of list of wide receivers that I mentioned, who would you prefer out of those? Is there one that really stands out for you, or do you think you would prefer Josh Gordon over the rest?
I like Gordon over the two players who are sandwiched around him there in Jeffrey and Thomas. I do think Will Fuller is very interesting. He was a player who was taken two picks before my selection, and it would have been very difficult for me there choosing between Will Fuller and Evan Ingram, although Ingram certainly, you know, a very good consolation prize in that spot. Will Fuller, I think, still has a much wider range of outcomes than the rest of those guys, perhaps with the exception of Josh Gordon. You're looking at two players there who next season could go out and have, you know, 1,500 yards and, you know, 13, 14 touchdowns, or might end up mostly as vertical players who are used as decoys in their offenses. Certainly, Gordon, the market share, the volume that he had late in the season, especially when he's competing with an early pick that they took and had high hopes for until he really fizzled down the stretch, talking about Corey Coleman, when you take that volume away from him very quickly, that's a sign that he's able to come back and be himself. And I think that was always the big question. It's even for someone like Josh Gordon, it's an amazing accomplishment to be away from the NFL that long and step back in almost as if nothing had happened. You hadn't missed a day. So in that context, it's very, very exciting. You saw what he did in his big breakout season, although he wasn't extremely efficient that year, perhaps not surprisingly, playing with the Cleveland Browns, and it was on huge volume. So the question then is, can he get that gigantic volume going forward in an offense and for a team that has more question marks and is really more of a train wreck than any other team in the NFL?
Yeah, Josh Gordon is just one of those, you know, conundrums. If he can stay out of trouble off the field, there's no doubt about the ability on the field. But as you mentioned, coming back in after the time away and just looking so natural that first game back, or the second game back when he played the Chargers, up against Casey Hayward, who was one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL this season, and just toasted him in a couple of plays, looked really, really good. So you mentioned Coleman as well. Coleman is somebody who I've been selling off in all my dynasty leagues over the last couple of months. Just as you mentioned, the way they changed the production, switched the offense straight over to Gordon, I thought was a clear sign there as to how they felt about Coleman's production and usage this season. But I'm still an Alshon Jeffrey supporter. I've kind of followed him from Chicago to the Eagles, and I even bought more of him last offseason, and then he obviously got rewarded with the extension. I think when you're looking at Dynasty as well, you have to take into consideration a little bit that long-term value of having Alshon Jeffrey locked into that contract for the next kind of 3 to 4 seasons, and then Josh Gordon with his off-the-field concerns. Just taking that all into consideration, I probably still would give Alshon Jeffrey the nod, and that's a safety call. I don't know about you, Sean. I'm a player who kind of stays averse from players who have had those kind of drug suspensions, PED suspensions, because the players do tend to fall back into that trap again. I know Josh Gordon's been back in, Martavis Bryant's been back in this time, but we've seen, Josh Gordon in the past has fallen back into it. Martavis Bryant has got himself in trouble a couple of times. We've seen guys like Justin Blackmon. It's a very hard one to just make sure you shake it fully. Do you try and factor that into your drafting in dynasty leagues?
When the players are currently out, they tend to be off my board entirely. Not that there wouldn't be a spot I might consider them, but they'll almost always go before I think you can legitimately consider them. Charles Klein Hexel has written a very good article, both for RotoWorld and some work on RotoViz, talking about the likelihood of players coming back from suspensions, and it's just very difficult. I have a share of Justin Blackmon in one of my dynasty leagues that I keep around on IR just to sort of continue to root for him, remind myself that I had him, and look at that. I do think in a situation where someone has made it all the way back to where Gordon is, that he becomes much more palatable and much more interesting, and partly simply knowing and having relationships with people who have had struggles with this kind of thing and how difficult it is and how hard you root for them. Someone who's come back to where Josh Gordon is, I think I can certainly take the leap and root with him. And, whether or not he's the right move there for me does not actually come down to further suspension. It's more simply a matter of, can he at his age in that offense legitimately be a factor who scores enough more points than someone like a Will Fuller, who looked phenomenal in the stretches this season, is going to be locked in going forward with Deshaun Watson in an offense that could be incredibly explosive. And I think you're looking at the potential for DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller to both be wide receiver ones simultaneously next year in that offense. With a difference in age and perhaps the difference in safety from some other non-suspension kinds of issues, I think I might go away from Josh Gordon there.
Yeah, and a really good piece there, so make sure you check that one out. Next up, I want to talk about some of the 2018 prospects, kind of how they fit in as rookies, and we might look as to how we'll fit them into the overall dynasty picture. The RV team have again been doing an awesome job. There's so much great content up over the last couple of weeks on the prospects and those, the draft look-aheads, and we want to kind of highlight some of Jordan Hoover's work, the 2018 rookie rankings that he has done. What are some of the main player questions to answer this offseason, and have you some of the guys there who you think are potential sleepers and where you'd be fitting them into your overall Dynasty 100?
Yeah, I always try and take in as many different rankings as possible, especially from people like Jordan, who are as familiar with all the players and as capable and competent in in fantasy itself. So very good fantasy players and have both that sort of scouting analytics background, but also play fantasy very successfully. So when Jordan puts out his rankings, I always take very close notice. And one of the things I thought was interesting is that he has James Washington and Cortland Sutton at 2 and 3 after the obvious number one there with Barkley. One of the things I'm interested in following is this sort of contrast between productive seniors versus unproductive underclassmen. Now, we've written in the past on the site, and some other very good authors have written in the past, you know, for Football Outsiders, some different places like that, about this difference between younger prospects, older prospects, and then prospects who declare early versus those who don't. And whether or not a prospect declares early actually makes a pretty huge difference in terms of what their production is likely to be going forward. And I think that one of the things that you see there is you see both this element of age, which obviously the early declares tend to be younger, but then also this element of experience. So you're really drawing in both of those important factors. And I've got an article that's going to come out here in the next week or so looking at specifically this one issue and isolating this one issue and looking at players who are drafted 11 to 32 versus players who are drafted in the second round. And I say 11 to 32 because the expectation based on draft pick falls off so sharply that you really want to separate out that top 10. And certainly there are different ways to do it where you could look at the exact value from each spot, but just separating out that top 10, which really has different expectations and, by the way, are almost all early declares. Now, we can look at the difference here and look at seniors versus players who declared early, and it's really pretty shocking because players who declared early and were drafted in the second round in the last 16 years have actually outscored first-round picks in that 11 to 32 range who were seniors. And then you see the same thing in the second and third round, where third-round early declarers outscore second-round seniors. And that's pretty surprising when you consider how big of a role the draft position plays when we're projecting out fantasy players.
No, it definitely is. And you know, when it comes to those rookie picks, you know, people talking about what to do with their dynasty rookie picks in their draft, you know, the third round, fourth round picks, I'm one that I tend to trade them away a lot, or else I actually try and acquire them and use them as kind of lottery picks. But there's so much difference. Like, once you go past those first kind of five picks in rookie drafts, it's really a lottery after that. And it can be very, very tough to decide. I think a lot depends as well, obviously, on where the players land and the landing spots around them. We already mentioned Juju Smith-Schuster, but obviously if you're playing in an offense with, you know, opposite Antonio Brown, with a guy like Ben Roethlisberger throwing the ball, it really helps. Do you, you know, at this point, you're looking obviously at the talent and where you think players might go, but at what point then do you see this real shake-up after the draft? Is there any players that, if they find an ideal landing spot, that you think could really jump up in terms of the dynasty rookie rankings?
I think you're looking at landing spot for almost all of these running backs, and so it'll be very interesting to see where Geis, Chubb, Jones, all of those players land. Jordan has Royce Freeman at 16, and I think that is an interesting pick just in terms of Freeman being a very controversial player, where I think he's a possible even top five rookie pick, especially if he goes somewhere where he could have immediate opportunity. There are definitely some teams out there like that, and Freeman has that less exciting sort of running style, in some ways more of a Jordan Howard kind of style. But you have to consider that players like Le'Veon Bell were considered to be very, very boring coming out of college. And even someone like David Johnson was considered to be even a potential H-back, someone who didn't run up the middle well. And Freeman, you look at his incredible collegiate production, where he set all of these Pac-12 records and very impressive early production, where he was a star right from the first day he stepped on the field as a freshman. And then you look at the fact that he was able to succeed in all areas. He put up huge yardage numbers, but also big scoring numbers, both in a younger, more explosive Oregon offense. And then certainly when their quarterback was healthy this season, he put up some big touchdown numbers, but then also someone who was involved in the passing game. So I think he can be one of those big hybrid backs, where once you start to get a big back who can also catch passes, then they just have a lot more margin to where not as many things have to go right for them to score fantasy points if they're going to be used in multiple multiple roles.
Yeah, and so, sometimes those guys then they can go at the back end of the rounds, going to them better teams, obviously get the opportunity to get in the red zone a little bit more. So it's always interesting once the draft happens to really see where we expect these guys to switch up in those rookie drafts. Obviously, there are two things that I mentioned that are up on rotoviz.com at the moment. At the moment, for listening to Rotoviz Radio, you can save yourself 30% off a Rotoviz NFL pass. All you have to do is head on over to the podcast homepage, that is rotoviz.com/podcast. Click on there and that automatically saves you 30% off your Rotoviz NFL pass with that discount. It obviously gets you access through the end of next season, so get in there, get all the great content that's up there at the moment, and obviously get ready for the 2018 season. We'll take you all the way through that with the great apps and all the content we have got going on. So more great stuff that's up there includes the free agent articles, and we're going to talk a little bit about that now. Who are some of the most kind of compelling guys that you're looking to see where they might move to, some of the free agents coming up here, and what teams should we be really focusing on for kind of free agency, if we're trying to, whether it's in redraft or whether we're trying to buy some value pre-free agency in dynasty?
Well, you mentioned in your notes Kirk Cousins, Allen Robinson, Carlos Hyde, and then some potential cut or trade candidates like Jordy Nelson and Alex Smith. And that's one of the things that we're doing in the free agency series that I would encourage people to look at, is that we have the free agents and ideas about where they're going to go and what fits might be for players coming in, but also looking at players who are likely cut candidates, so you can get a sense of which other players might be on the move. Someone like a Jordy Nelson, and Neil Dutton especially, has written a lot of these articles and is doing a fantastic job with them. He's suggesting that he thinks Jordy will stay, and I also think that that's the case, but certainly they have some interesting questions there with both Nelson and then Randall Cobb. Looking at the quarterbacks, Kirk Cousins, a difficult situation there with the franchise tag in Washington and how they continue to play out that soap opera. Then you also have Alex Smith in Kansas City, where he's coming off of arguably his best season. The Chiefs again flopping the playoffs for Chiefs fans. It's yet another season where they've actually defeated both of the playoff teams during the regular season, but were not able to make it there themselves. So where do you see those guys going? We have the Cleveland Browns, the Jets, the Vikings, teams with a lot of cap space. The Vikings have some difficult decisions to make because they actually have three different quarterbacks who are looking at different scenarios in free agency. And then we have a team like the Denver Broncos that doesn't have as much cap space, would have to be more creative. There were news reports today talking again about how they would like to trade Aqib Talib because they have a lot of money tied up in their corners. The Broncos are going to make a big move, but we don't know exactly what type of move it would be. Where do you like Cousins and Smith?
Well, I think if you're looking, you know, obviously it's an in-division move, so it'll be hard for them to get a deal with the Chiefs to get Smith unless they do cut him. The interesting one is Kirk Cousins, who actually prior to the trade deadline, it was actually on the day of the trade deadline last year, I had a couple of people come and, tell me about reports going on that the Denver Broncos were trying to trade for Kirk Cousins at that time. So obviously it would have been very tough for them to manage the cap mid-season, but they obviously had some interest at that time. So it'll be interesting to see if that interest progresses this off-season. I think if they could get Smith there in Denver, I think he probably fits this offense a little bit more. It is less of a down-the-field passing offense, you know, with guys like Demaryius Thomas, who you can get on those, shorter screen passes and get things moving. Same with Emmanuel Sanders. I think Kirk Cousins, though, if you look at where, ideally, if you were looking at a team who could really use that quarterback and have that cap space, you mentioned there the Jacksonville Jaguars, I think if he went there would be a very, very good fit. You know, we've seen how close the team pushed New England in the conference championship. I think if you had a quarterback like Kirk Cousins, I think they could have managed that fourth quarter much, much better and had the opportunity to beat the team and now be playing in the Super Bowl. Kirk Cousins this offseason is the one that I think is the most interesting piece off the free agent puzzle. Obviously, there's a lot of good wide receivers on the market with guys like Allen Robinson. We mentioned to see what happens with Jordy, but the quarterbacks is a very interesting situation. You mentioned too with the Vikings, but with Kirk Cousins, how would you see, do you think that is a good fit if we could slot him down there in Jacksonville?
I think so. And then that has some sort of carry-on effects where we start to look at those Jaguars receivers and what they might do. The reports suggest that they will either sign Allen Robinson to an extension or franchise him, which then you have it cascade down to where we now have Robinson and the young guys who have come on a little bit with Westbrook. And especially, I think the most impressive of their players in the last month has been Keelan Cole. So even if they let Marquise Lee go, which I think is the move that they're going to make, they're going to let Lee move on. They may decide to cut Alan Hearns, who has a big cap number and, you know, not dead cap that would accumulate as a result of cutting him. They could end up with a Robinson, Westbrook, Cole lineup that would be pretty compelling, especially with a good quarterback. It would leave those secondary guys to where they would be interesting fantasy acquisitions, but at the same time, still put Robinson to where he could have a huge market share. If you have an elite quarterback or even just a competent quarterback, then Robinson could do what we saw DeAndre Hopkins do this season, where he jumps right back up into that top 6-7 players overall.
Yeah. That would make it, I'm actually getting excited listening to that. If you have Allen Robinson, Kirk Cousins throwing him the ball and then spreading it around, you know, Fournette in the backfield, and have that defense as well. The one part, obviously, with the Jaguars too, they do need to upgrade that tight end position. But they, you know, they have the defense. They could have a really, really good offense with a couple of moves, and they have that cap space. And I think it's a no-brainer if they can move away. We talked about it, myself and Anthony Mako, in one of the recap podcasts. If you move away from Blake Bortles, who I think has a $19 million fifth year option that would have to be paid this year, and if you move into somebody like Kirk Cousins, even if you're having to pay him $26-27 million, I think the return on investment there with the way their cap space is just makes a lot of sense. Alex Smith, on the other hand, I touched on the Broncos. I don't think it'll happen because it's in the division. I could see Alex Smith ending up possibly with the Cleveland Browns via trade. Obviously the Browns have a lot of picks and cap space to go as well, and I think you could have him as a bridge quarterback if they do take another young quarterback, or else if they stick with Deshaun Kizer. Do you think that's a sensible move if, you know, if we've seen the Browns going with somebody like Alex Smith for 2018?
I would hate to see Smith get stuck with the Browns, since they seem so dysfunctional. And I think Kansas City fans still have some frustration with Dorsey, the new GM for Cleveland, who that's one of the connections people are making, is that obviously he was with the Chiefs, and he made some savvy acquisitions, some good draft picks with the Chiefs. But you look at the different cap calculations on, you know, over the cap or spot tracks and some of the different sites there, and you always see the Chiefs are dead last in cap space. So one of the things that he did was destroy the Chiefs cap situation. And so I think we continue to have a lot of questions about the team that the Browns have in place from a brain trust perspective. And so my preference as an Arizona Cardinals fan as well would be that Smith maybe moved over to the Cardinals. He's also been connected to them. Unfortunately, they don't have nearly as much flexibility with what they're doing. You have a team there with the Cardinals that has a lot of talent, but they have a lot of questions and a quarterback situation they need to address without as much cap space as some of these other teams we've talked about. So in some ways, that might be a longer shot, but that would be a better fit for him with a team that's ready to win now.
Yeah, there's a lot of question marks at the quarterback position around the league, but it's very, very hard to see how they're all going to, you know, fit in. You mentioned, like, you know, with Dorsey and the situation there between the Chiefs and the Browns. There's just a lot of question marks around certain things. I mentioned the Broncos there in division. So there's a lot of things which going to be fun to see how it all shakes out. Was there any other players that caught your eye for free agency?
Well, you had mentioned Carlos Hyde, and he's always, I think, a little bit of a controversial player. I've been down on Hyde, and he had an interesting season this season, because certainly if you drafted him at his ADP this year, you are not complaining in that he finished as the RB8, which is a solid finish. But then you go back and look at what he actually did, and he was really the tier break, where the seven running backs ahead of him were all league winners of various types. And certainly those very top, you know, there are probably two tier breaks in that just top seven group itself. But his efficiency, again, was very poor. And so in part, you can put that on the offense and the fact that this is a rebuilding team. But in part, I think you have to put it on Hyde. He has not been as elite a player as some people talk about him. This year, he had the eighth worst rushing fantasy points over expectation among running backs who had at least 500 yards. And he also really struggled in his efficiency as a receiver. Now, the thing that he did that really jumped out that I think makes him compelling as a fantasy own in the future is that he really emerged as a receiver. So then the question is, the landing spot is important, not just because it needs to be one where he'll have an opportunity. You'd hate for him to land in a situation like we saw with the Vikings last year, where they add Latavius Murray and then draft it back over him. I mean, that would be crushing. But even if he lands in a spot where he has some opportunity, you want it to be opportunity where he's going to catch passes. You look at the Shanahan offense and what it does for some of these running backs, and it's really easy to look at Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman and see how losing Shanahan hurt them from a fantasy perspective, specifically because it hurt them as receivers. Freeman had averaged over 60 receptions the previous 2 years and then only hit 36 this past year. Coleman caught four fewer passes than he had the previous season, despite playing in two more games and being more involved in a runner. So he was more of a focal point in the area that actually doesn't get as many fantasy points for you. So when you're looking at Carlos Hyde, you definitely want him to move into an offense where he's number one, the bell cow, but number two, where the offensive coordinator really incorporates the running back in the receiving game, as he's now showed the ability to do this at least to an extent.
Yeah, I always tend to look at those running backs that are going to catch the ball, you know, the pass catch ones, and he did emerge, as you mentioned. If you look through his first 3 years in the NFL, he had 50 receptions through those first 3 years. He had 59 receptions this past year. But you mentioned the efficiency. It could have been so much more. He had a couple of games, you know, in the middle of the season where he had 11 targets, and obviously the production wasn't there from it. But, you know, I still see a glimmer of hope there for what we can see, what he can do moving forward. It's another one I'm intrigued by. I just want to mention as well for this show and for all the shows on RotoViz Radio this week are being brought to you by MyBookie. They are the official sportsbook of RotoViz Radio, and obviously they've teamed up with us during the season. They've teamed up with us for the playoffs. They're teaming up with us for the Super Bowl. Their website is mybookie.ag. They are the number one rated online sportsbook. And if you maybe have some things that you fancy, you say to your friends, you know, I think this is going to happen in the Super Bowl. I think that's going to happen. Such and such. Rob Gronkowski is going to have two touchdowns, 100 yards. If you want to make your own prop, go on over to mybookie.ag, and you can pretty much bet on anything up there with their new prop building tool. Pretty much any option you want to bet. So I think that's great. Just jump on over. Great live bet and a great mobile app, and the website is very, very easy to use. And if you sign up now using our code RVRadio with your first deposit, they will match it with up to a 50% bonus. So 50% bonus with that code RVRadio. The website again is mybookie.ag. And you know, there's just so many options this week. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl now. Lots of different line movement, lots of different things with players and props. Is there any player that you're thinking could go under the radar this week, and you know, you'd be interested in picking on one of those lines to have over the yards or over the catches?
Nick Foles just was phenomenal last week. So I think you go through and you see, you know, what your different options might be with Foles. The Eagles went into the playoffs not even favored in their first game because he had played so poorly to end the season. You lose Carson Wentz, and Wentz was a legitimate MVP candidate, probably the biggest breakout player, the most important player from the season. And then the Eagles lose him, and all of a sudden it seems like the season is over. All of a sudden these Super Bowl dreams have been derailed, and then Foles comes out of nowhere and is a star. He backed up Alex Smith in Kansas City and had a couple of games there when he was pressed into duty, played extremely well. I mean, Foles is a guy who had a 27 touchdown, 2-interception season with Chip Kelly. And depending on how you want to look at that, if you look at it the way a lot of people do, where you say, well, Chip Kelly is a joke, his offense didn't work, you know, he's not an NFL coach. Well, it actually becomes more impressive that Foles went 27-2 with him as the coach there. And he owns a 61-29, you know, career touchdown interception ratio, despite also playing the season for Jeff Fisher. So I think we have to start looking at Foles as being the type of quarterback who, you know, would be an upgrade for, you know, 10 to 15 NFL teams. And again, it is an example of a situation where having a strong backup is a big deal in the NFL. And certainly he's one of the guys. You look at what the Vikings did with Case Keenum. Having those guys who can be strong backups, you know, that makes a big difference. Before we go more into the Super Bowl, though, I'd like to ask you, what's your favorite bet from all of these different options that you can choose from?
I always like looking, and you know, you mentioned Nick Foles. I like to, if you think somebody's, it's a bit like playing DFS. You think somebody's, you know, maybe on the unfavored side, and you look to see what they can do. Guys like Aguilar hasn't had a huge playoffs. If you can get him on over the yards or over the catches, I think there's interesting moves to be made there. I do like to, I like to go straight up line betting. You know, go take the points or lay the points. And sometimes then, if you're looking at the props, if you think, I was really close last year in the Super Bowl with the Atlanta Falcons against the Patriots, with the Patriots being favored in that one, and I went with a minus 10 spread for the Atlanta Falcons. I think it might have been 6-1 at the time, and it was looking really, really good, obviously, as the game progressed, and then all fell apart on me. So sometimes I like to go for those kind of extreme ones just to have a little bit of fun. If I do like a team that's maybe the underdog, then to win outright and then to just like push it a little bit further, it's always interesting to do that. But I think in this game, you know, I mentioned pushing it a little bit further. I think you mentioned Nick Foles. I think that the game and the game plan here is going to be very, very interesting from both teams. But I think the way the Eagles will set up schematically in this one's going to be tough for the Patriots. I was extremely, extremely impressed, not just by the offensive side of the ball, you know, for the Eagles against the Minnesota Vikings. I thought defensively they were absolutely superb. Certain plays they obviously had scouted, very similar to what the Patriots do, where they motion the back out wide or into the slot and then they take them back just to see the coverage. And we've seen against the Vikings that the Eagles a couple of times obviously had this set up, and without even having to audible on defense, they moved a player out, moved them back in, and then it was maybe a 4 or 5 man blitz that obviously wasn't exactly what Case Keenum had expected to come towards him. So there was a couple of situations in the game, and I think that there lines up then again. I think up front, both sides of the ball, I think the offensive line of the Eagles is better, and I think the defensive line of the Eagles is better. So I think a lot of people are going in, obviously, if Tom Brady, he is obviously the best quarterback in this match, there's no debate in that there. But I think up front it's going to be a really tough match for the Patriots on both sides of the ball. I think like rightly they are favored, but I think the Eagles, and if you want to push it a little bit on the spread and maybe take them -3 or, you know, maybe even all the way up to -7 and get a little bit of extra action on there, I think that's an interesting way to look at it.
Well, I have the Eagles 27-24 in this one. What would be your game pick?
Yeah, I feel it'll be very, very similar. I can't see the Patriots winning that at the line of scrimmage, and that is such an important part of the game. People, you know, you can look at the quarterback, you can look at the running back, look at the receivers, but if the quarterback doesn't have time to throw the ball, and we've seen even on Foles and a couple of those deep shots, the amount of time he had. So I think similar to you, but I'm going to go 30-24 for the Eagles, and maybe we see Nick Foles somehow getting himself that Super Bowl MVP.
That would be awesome. I don't root against the Patriots as much as I do against most of the teams. Like, you know, we talked on RotoViz Radio in the past how Central Florida was the real national champion in college football this year. And certainly I think having Alabama win those games doesn't give a good feeling to anybody. I think the Patriots, even though they've run into controversy with some of the things that they've done, they're such a model franchise and they do so many things the right way. And they incorporate so many of the different elements that you would like to see, whether it's good play calling, whether it's building out your entire organization and being able to continually lose coaching talent to other teams, not just free agent talent, which obviously the best teams obviously do, but you lose coaching talent all the time, but they're building that out and they're going to have replacements who come in and also do the job. I think that because of that, they're easier to root for, because I would like to see more NFL teams act in a more competent manner, because it would create an environment where the games are more fun. I think if you're an NFL fan, this was a difficult year because there were so many teams, especially in the AFC, that were functioning at such a low level that you just really want them to get their act together. And so in a scenario here where you have the Patriots as such a positive role model, not in terms of the way they act, but in all of the things that they do from a football perspective. And so I don't have as much of a problem with the evil empire winning this as I would if I didn't think they were so valuable to the NFL, trying to show the way to these other teams, make the NFL more fun again.
Yeah, I always try and look at it, you know, from a neutral perspective. I never try and go in one side or the other. I know the Patriots have won, you know, the Super Bowl, and they've really dominated over the last kind of 17 years. But when you look at it, you know, I think they deserve to. They're so consistent. They, you know, you mentioned the analytics side of it. There's just a lot of stuff that goes into it, and they have been so dominant from that point of view. But there's a lot of people out there just think, you know, the Patriots, you know, they win every year, it makes it boring. Well, somebody else should go and stop them from winning it, and maybe this year it will be the Eagles. But the Eagles have just, you know, transitioned throughout the season so, so well. They lost Jason Peters early in the season in week 7. They acquired JJ in week 8. And then obviously Carson Wentz went down in week 14. So many different things. And, you know, prior to the conference championship game against the Eagles, we had all the information about Nick Foles can't throw the deep ball. He can't hit, you know, the right-hand quadrant of the field with accuracy. And then obviously he goes and he absolutely dominates in that one. So sometimes as well, we might start to look at Nick Foles like the best quarterback of all time after one performance. It'll be somewhere in the middle of what he did when he wasn't good and when he obviously produced what he did 2 weeks ago. I don't think we're going to see what he did 2 weeks ago again. But game planning specifics, we talked about Alex Smith earlier, but a lot of the stuff that they run with the Eagles is kind of like what Andy Reid is running there with the Chiefs, and Doug Peterson has just had a really good key on game planning this season. They've done really well on third down. Their problem has been that they've got into third down a lot of times, and they've just managed to get themselves out of it over and over again. They were the seventh best team in efficiency in terms of running the ball this year, and the Patriots then were the second worst, allowing 4.6 yards per carry. So the running game here could be very interesting. We've seen week 17 they pretty much shut JJ down. We've seen in the playoffs now that they've worked him in back-to-back games with Nick Foles in there, so I think we're going to see him involved heavily. I think the running game is going to be a big key here for the Eagles. I think we'll see LeGarrette Blount as well, and we've seen Corey Clement been shuffled in there as well. So I think the run game, that they're kind of the hogs, if we want to call them that, up front for the Eagles, are going to cause major problems here for the Patriots. Do you think that's one of the real keys to the game here, is the battle up front?
Definitely the battle up front. It can be interesting to see what the Patriots decide to do, because the big difference between this Eagles team and the Chiefs team that you mentioned, obviously Peterson coming from that system, is just that the Eagles have a lot better passing personnel. They have got a lot more depth, so they can do a lot more things to you in the passing game. If you have Ertz, you have Jeffrey, you have someone like Torrey Smith, who's not necessarily that well thought of, but can certainly take the top off of defense. And we saw him really score what would be the nail touchdown last week in the championship game there. They have Nelson Aguilar emerging. I think they're very difficult to stop, and I think that the Patriots have a situation, as you've mentioned, where they're just simply not as good overall, and to where the game needs to come down to them, to this battle between Nick Foles and Tom Brady. And I think one of the things that you can do with that a little bit is the Patriots will again employ their bend but don't break style of defense, where they don't try and put too much pressure on any one player. And I almost think that they may decide to sort of egg the Eagles into running the ball, because the more running plays that you have, the more third downs you end up facing, the more plays you have to have in a drive in order to score a touchdown. And so I can see the Patriots really sitting back, letting the Eagles run the ball against them, to an extent, and saying, if you have to do a 10, 12, 15 play drive and you have to do it over and over in the game, then we feel more comfortable with that than giving you these big strikes to some of the really talented receivers the Eagles have. Certainly the Patriots don't want to get way behind against this caliber of defense. And, if they could keep the game close, then it goes down to Tom Brady at the end. And we saw last year in the Super Bowl, we saw just last week in the AFC Championship game, that in the fourth quarter with Tom Brady, they're going to feel comfortable. If they can stay in the game to that point, then the game probably swings to their favor.
Yeah, and you mentioned there as well, they might like play a little bit more of a prevent defense, don't give up that big play over the top, because we've seen the Vikings, they give up that touchdown to Torrey Smith, you mentioned, they give up the big play to Alshon Jeffrey, and maybe the Patriots, like you mentioned, they allow those shorter passes and say, right, Nick Foles, today we're going to hopefully pick you off a couple of times based on you have to make those decisions and make those reads and be able to execute, under pressure. So we'll see what happens there. It's, I think it sets up for a fascinating matchup. I think it's a lot closer than a lot of the kind of most people, the neutral or the people who aren't really focused in on what these teams have been doing all season. I think the Eagles have been really tremendous. I think if we had a case here where Carson Wentz was the starting quarterback for the Eagles, I think there's a strong possibility that we would see the Eagles favorite here in the Super Bowl. It really comes down to the best team, I think, on paper is the Eagles. The best quarterback is Tom Brady. And then obviously the narrative goes with the Patriots being the better of the two teams. So have you anything else that you want to add in about the Super Bowl prior to wrapping it up here, Sean?
I don't think so. Just that this one is going to be fantastic. Like a lot of the recent ones have been, this could be a very fitting sequel to last year's Patriots-Falcons game.
Yeah, and luckily enough, we haven't had any major blowouts. Last year, luckily, it was going to be a blowout in one way, and obviously then the Patriots came back and won it. So we've had quite competitive Super Bowls in recent years. If you think back to some of the 1990s Super Bowls, there was some real blowouts, and it was over very early. So hopefully we do get a competitive one into the fourth quarter, and it's going to be I always like, you know, you have the Patriots there who have won it so many times in recent years, and then you have the Eagles looking to go and grab themselves a championship. So I would like to see the kind of the underdog win and go through, and it's just going to be very, very fascinating. You look at Nick Foles was kind of cast aside. People said including myself, I said that Nick Foles wouldn't be able to produce 3 games in a row in the playoffs to be able to win the Super Bowl. I'll hold my hands up and say that I said that on multiple podcasts, and he didn't have to do a lot against the Falcons. He did a lot in the last one. We'll see what he does in this one. But I think now at this stage, with one game there, all is to play for, and anything can happen in this one when you have Foles at the quarterback position. So big opportunity to write his name down as a legend in the NFL. So we'll see what happens. But that's going to do us for today's edition of RotoViz Radio. My name's Colm Kelly. You can find me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. Special thanks to Sean again for asking me to jump aboard the podcast here and have this, obviously, with Pat on vacation. So you can follow Sean on Twitter at FF_contrarian. Have a good one. Thank you for listening to RotoViz Radio. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.